And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Santa Barbara and Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is Yesterday and Today. My guests are talking about interesting stories in the news either today or in the past. My first guest is a financial guru who recapped the first quarter of 2011's financial markets for us. We tried to make sense of the conflicting business news in the headlines in 2011. My next guest is the creator and host of one of CNBC's most highly rated documentaries, Marijuana Inc. We'll go inside the hazy world of marijuana on 420. Yes, there is a pun there, folks, to expose California's number one cash crop and discuss her latest book titled Joint Ventures. As always, if you want to join in the conversation or if you want to talk to Trish Regan, you can call us at 639-0008. Trish Regan is a television host, an Emmy-nominated investigative journalist, and an author. She previously hosted CNBC's The Call and was the creator and host of CNBC's two most highly rated documentaries and provides regular commentary and reporting on CNN and NBC. Her latest book on America's emerging marijuana industry is titled Joint Ventures, Inside America's Almost Legal Marijuana Industry. Trish's in-depth style on the underground marijuana industry has been phenomenal. It's been reported they got 30 million viewers for her special that she did for CNBC. I would die for 5% of that. Trish joined CNBC from CBS, where she was a contributor to the CBS Evening News. She graduated cum laude in 2000 from Columbia University with a bachelor's degree in U.S. history. She's an honors graduate of Phillips Exeter Academy. She's fluent in Spanish and speaks Italian. Interestingly enough, she's a former Miss New Hampshire in the Miss America pageant. In April of 2006, the Houston Chronicle named her one of the 10 women in broadcast news to watch. She and her husband were married in 2001. They live in New York with their twin infant daughters. Welcome to the show, Trish. How are you today?
Wow, Bill, that is quite an impressive biography you put together there.
Well,
wow.
It's nothing more than a recap.
Unturned.
It's nothing more than a recap of your life, and you have led a phenomenal life so far. So congratulations
Thank
to you for
you
all of that. But you're talking about a subject that's near and dear to Californians' hearts because, of course, we had Proposition 19 in the last general election that we had. With the defeat of Prop 19 in California, many of us were left wondering, what's the fate of marijuana legalization? So from all that you've learned, what's the state of marijuana in the United States? Has marijuana time come?
You know, I think its time has come. It's still going to take a bit of time on the federal level, but look at what's going on right now in the states. You've got 15 states and Washington, D.C., all with some form of legalization on the books, primarily for medical marijuana. Well, I think it's only a matter of time before you start to see more and more states get onto this bandwagon. In other words, this is a movement that's been sweeping the country, and the federal government will probably be playing catch-up. This has happened before. You look at something like alcohol prohibition, and it was happening on a state level that the repeal was going on. And eventually, the federal government caught up to where the states were. But you often see states take chances in a way that the federal government wouldn't be so willing to do. So I think that's going to play itself out in the coming years.
Well, it's interesting that you pose it that way, and it's going to lead into one of my lines of questioning was, this is really boiling down to a states' rights issue versus a federal issue, as you've laid it out. I mean, legalizing marijuana in the states, is it really a federal issue? Should the feds be involved in this, or is this a states' rights issue? Should every state be allowed to determine it for themselves?
Well, I'm a big believer in individual responsibility. I'm a big believer in states having the right to really design their own futures and their own policy. So from where I come out, this is a state issue. I mean, this is not a marijuana, and I'm not advocating marijuana use, and no one should be seeing this as sort of a glorification of marijuana. In fact, I've actually never tried marijuana, and I would never want my kids to try it. That said, I'm a big believer in individual responsibility, and I think that that's where sort of states are coming out on this. I mean, you look at something like marijuana, a drug that has been proven to be significantly less addictive than nicotine or alcohol, and you have to ask, well, why exactly is it subjected to so much more of a moral standard and a taboo that these other substances have never been subjected to, really? At least certainly not in the same way. So you know, when states are looking at this, you know, I think it's fair to say this is not going to really hurt anyone. I mean, we're not talking about meth or cocaine or something that's really, really deadly. And yet we're spending all kinds of money, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars, trying to go after so-called criminals that are working in this industry or using marijuana. And it just seems like you got to scratch your head and say, really, is this the best use of our taxpayer dollars?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. We're talking to Trish Regan, everybody, author of the new book, Joint Ventures Inside America's Almost Legal Marijuana Industry. And Trish, in this very studio, law enforcement officers came in and talked against Proposition 19 when it was on the books. We had Ventura Police Chief Ken Corney came in, and he didn't necessarily talk about marijuana or anything else. He talked about the deficiencies in Proposition 19 itself as a law. A more common complaint of law enforcement, however, is that marijuana really is the gateway to further crime. It leads to trafficking and other narcotics. It leads to violent crimes and things like that. How strong is the argument based on your research? Does marijuana lead to other criminal activity besides, including trafficking of narcotics?
Well, I actually think by making marijuana illegal, you're actually increasing the criminal activity that you're going to see, because you're inviting a whole host of characters into this sphere because of the simple fact that it's illegal. You look at the Mexican drug cartels, for example, 60% of their revenue comes directly from marijuana. Marijuana is the most profitable drug in the world. Where else can you grow something, a pound of marijuana, for $400 and then turn around and sell it for between $5,000 and $6,000 on the street? I mean, its profitability margins beat any other drug out there. So the cartels are very involved in this business, and I think that in and of itself contributes to a crime level that, you know, we could probably pretty easily get rid of. If you had a big company, a Philip Morris, Altria, out there manufacturing marijuana cigarettes, they would take a big dent, big chunk out of these cartels' earnings streams.
Well, absolutely. Altria announced earnings today, and when they announced earnings, earnings were in line with expectations. Think if they had marijuana on the books, they might have exceeded expectations. We're talking to Trish Regan, everybody, author of the book, Joint Ventures Inside America's Almost Legal Marijuana Industry. And Trish, you touched on it earlier in one of your answers, and that is the revenue that we're spending to enforce the laws against marijuana. But also there's the revenue stream of taxation on marijuana. And that's one of the things that proponents talk about. In this time where states are desperate for money, one way to get tax income would be to set up marijuana, legalize it, and get a tax on every joint, every package sold. What are your thoughts on that? Is that a viable concept?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely a viable concept. I mean, this is essentially found money for a number of states that are in pretty dire circumstances right now. They find money, number one, because they don't have to go after marijuana. I mean, there's some money that they'd have to spend on enforcement, but they don't have to spend so much on the prohibition effort. And number two, they can gain from the sales tax revenue.
All right, so it's a win-win in that regard.
Yes, it's a win-win. I mean, California Normals came out with a study that was fascinating, where they predicted they could roughly earn $14 billion for the state of California should marijuana be legalized there.
$14 billion could be got either by decreasing the cost of enforcement and or the increase in sales tax from it. That's a
right.
Staggering number. Well, in light of that and in light of the recent election that we went through with Proposition 19, you've studied this from all angles. In your opinion, why is it that Proposition 19 was defeated here in California? I mean, it was interesting. It had a healthy lead in the polls going into the election. Then in the end, it got thumped. And of all the states in the union, you'd think that California would be the most likely first state to legalize marijuana. Why'd we get defeated?
I don't think it's necessarily over, Bill. I think that you're probably going to see this resurface for sure in the coming years and in coming elections. And eventually, I think California probably will be the one to lead the nation. I mean, Colorado is a pretty strong contender, too, on the legalization front. And when I say, I mean full legalization. That said, I think that, you know, the reality is some people feel like, gosh, you know, things are bad enough in society. Do we really need to let one more genie out of the bottle? And when push comes to shove, even though they may be of the mindset, and I'm talking about voters right now, a lot of voters may be of the mindset that, look, you know, I don't really care what someone does in the privacy of their own home. As long as it's not affecting me or really endangering society, you know, that's their business. And I think, you know, without a doubt, people feel very passionately, and the numbers are pretty overwhelming, that the most of America actually does believe that medicinal marijuana should be allowed. But, you know, I think when push comes to shove, people just kind of feel like, do we need to really legalize one more sort of potentially bad thing? And that kind of mindset perhaps set in more so when people actually got in that voting booth.
It may have, and that may be just the reason it was defeated. And I agree with your statement, Trish, that it will resurface again. It's resurfaced, I think, 6 or 7 times since the 1960s on various propositions. No doubt it will be back again at some point in the future. Trish, you had the 2 award-winning documentaries with CNBC. Congratulations on those award-winning documentaries. Congratulations on the numbers. They were phenomenal on that. But I guess my question to you is, you've just come out with a book, Joint Ventures Inside America's Almost Legal Marijuana Industry. If you've done such a stellar job as you've done with the 2 documentaries, why did you need to come out with a book? What are we going to get in the book that we didn't get?
I'll let you in on the dirty little secret of TV. And the reality is you wind up leaving so much on the cutting room floor. So I had done hours and hours and hours of interviews and had tons and tons of transcripts with these fascinating people, really interesting characters that were on the front lines of this industry. Pioneers, really, that were risking it all to try and, you know, because they felt politically passionate about this and also because they felt that they had an opportunity to make a really good living. When I say risking it all, I mean, these are people that essentially could go to jail for
sure.
The business that they're in.
Absolutely.
So I just felt that there were all these stories that I wanted to tell, and I wanted to tell in a much deeper way than I could ever possibly hope to do, even in 2 hours of television with the 2 documentaries. So this takes it just much, much further. The analysis in terms of the economic analysis, the analysis into what's happening in Portugal, because that's a fascinating story unto itself. Portugal decriminalized all drugs in 2001 and has actually seen a decrease in overall drug usage rates and a huge decrease in marijuana use. And overall drug use among teens, which is pretty critical and pretty interesting. So there were all these elements that I just wasn't able to really expand upon or work into the actual documentaries, and I thought it would be a shame to let all this just go to waste. There's some really terrific information that I want to share with people.
Well, I think that that's very commendable. And you talked about some of the details in the books. You talked about the heroes, as you call them, that are pioneering in this area. I want to look at this from the business angle, if I can, for just a moment. And from the business perspective, marijuana really represents kind of a new frontier for entrepreneurs if they want to take the risk. I mean, there's money to be made in bud. Let's face it.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to put it. And it's funny, one of the characters I came across who wasn't in any of the documentaries but just had a pretty compelling story was a former guy who had made it big during the internet tech boom. And he had sold his company for millions of dollars and, you know, really, and is actually a hedge fund player as well. And it is sitting pretty financially. But he said to me, Trish, I see this as the next internet boom. He absolutely fundamentally believes that, and he said within the next 10 to 15 years this is going to catch on in a much bigger way, and I want to be there for part of the action. And there's a lot of people out there that, you know, they tend to politically feel strongly about this issue and in terms of individual and state rights, and they also feel that the bottom line is they stand to make a lot of money. One other person actually was a mother of a mother of 2 very young children, is running one of the biggest pot dispensaries in Colorado. And I said to her, you know, how can you sleep at night? As a mother myself, I would just be so worried about the feds knocking on my door and hauling me off to prison and who would take care of these kids. And she said, yeah, it's an issue I struggle with every day. There are many nights that I can't sleep, and I'm constantly worried about making sure I dot all my I's and cross all my T's and at least adhere to all the state regulations. That said, she said, you know, if you look back in time at some of the people that were in the bootlegging business, they did incredibly well. And
no,
they sold their companies to bigger alcohol manufacturers. And she said, I think there's a chance that that model is eventually going to happen. And you're going to have an Altria or some kind of company like that that's going to come in and try and swoop up all the grow facilities and the dispensaries.
Well, as an entrepreneur, for his sake, I hope that that happens. We're talking to Trish Regan, author of the new book, Joint Ventures Inside America's Most Almost Legal Marijuana Industry. Trish, we're having you on the show today on 420. There is a joke there. For some of my listeners who might not be getting the joke, do you mind enlightening them? What's the joke with 420?
You know, well, and I would tell those listeners that, you know, when I first began investigating the marijuana industry, I had absolutely no idea what the link of 420 was, so they're not alone. It's not something that everyone is entirely familiar with, but basically, 420 has such a huge significance in the marijuana community because it started back in California around 4:20 in the afternoon. A group of kids at a high school there in Northern California would go outside and smoke a joint at 4:20. So it's taken on sort of a life of its own, and 420 means a lot within the pot community. The time of day and, of course, the date is significant.
Well, we can't thank you enough for being our guest here on 420, talking about your latest book. We've been talking to Trish Regan, author of the book, Joint Ventures Inside America's Almost Legal Marijuana Industry. Trish, if people are intrigued by what they hear, or if they just want to get some more facts and figures about marijuana, where would you direct them to go to learn more?
Well, you know, certainly you can read the book, and that would be available on Amazon or at the bookstore. You know, and in terms of other, there's really some wonderful sites out there online. I know that CNBC did a really terrific analysis on a website called Marijuana and Money. And there's a lot of really outstanding books as well. I think this book is different in that it's really the first I've seen that approaches this from an economic business point of view, and really looks at the opportunity of all these sort of young entrepreneurs, what this opportunity is that they're trying to cash in on.
And I think it's great just for that reason alone. We've been talking to Trish Regan, author of the book, Joint Ventures Inside America's Almost Legal Marijuana Industry. Trish, thank you so much for being our special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Okay, thanks, Bill.
Take care.